When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Gather round, children, and listen to this song. And if you like these kind of things, then you can sing along. Well, go and tell your mama and tell it to your pa and every other mother. 1, 2, 3, 4. Think it's time to start the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the soccer edition. This is your host, Mitch. I'm here as always with Mateus. Hi, Mateus. How are you?
Feeling conflicted. We'll talk about
it. Yeah, you have just two sides of you that are like constantly. Yeah, it's an ever long fight that's gonna you're gonna experience again in the Copa America quarterfinals.
How do you even live? How do you even?
It's not gonna go your way. Also here with us is Emily. Hi, Emily. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. As I sit here, I realize that my cat peed somewhere he shouldn't have peed in this room, and it's so something I'm gonna have to deal with during this recording.
What I'm understanding is that you're coming up with excuses before we even get into the show.
Excuses? Like,
if I have a bad performance today, it's because I was smelling cat pee the entire time.
I don't think that's going to affect my performance. It's just something that as I sat down at my desk, I was like, what the fuck?
All right. Well.
Anyway,
if you're listening, if you're watching, keep an eye on that. Maybe during the YouTube edition, you're gonna like Mateus is gonna be talking about Julian Carranza, and Emily's just gonna be like smelling cat pee, and you could see it in her face.
It is quite violent.
Resolve, please sponsor us.
Luckily, there's no carpet, but it's Anyway, whatever.
All right. Well, best of luck to you for the rest of this hour that you have to deal with that.
Thanks.
Let's get into it. In talking about a U.S. men's national team friendly that feels like happened a long time ago, and it's because it was a whole week ago. We recorded the day of this game happening, right?
The day before.
We recorded like a week ago, and the U.S. played Brazil in a friendly that I can't say we were optimistic about after the Colombia game that we talked extensively about last week. But the U.S. actually played pretty well and got a result in this game, a 1-1 draw, which at least for me, I mean, and take this with a grain of salt because I'm ever the optimist, but it fills me with a lot of optimism going into Copa America. Like if we got slapped in both of our friendly games leading up to this tournament against two teams that we could potentially play in the quarterfinals of this tournament if we make another group, I wouldn't be feeling very confident. I would not be very excited. But now I can't wait to go to Dallas next weekend and go watch the U.S. against Bolivia. I'm so excited. I can't wait to watch Joe Scally play for my country. Because he's that guy. Mateus, I'm going to throw to you about this very conflicting game that you got to watch.
Yeah, well, I think first things first, it was a friendly, right? But let's dispel any of the arguments here. I said this a little bit on the Scuffed Live show. Brazil played hard. They played hard. They didn't roll over. This wasn't like a... They were about as upset as the driver next to Emily's house. They played angry to a certain extent, at least as angry as they would be outside of like an actual World Cup game. Damn straight, I know that. but the U.S. defended solidly, at times they were compacted all the way back, and they gave up the goal early, right? But they had chances as well. Obviously, Musa rifled one off the crossbar in the first minute. Also, in the, I think it was like the 65th or 67th minute, when Pulisic had a wide open shot and Alisson had to save the day there for Brazil. And despite all the pressure that Brazil put on the U.S. towards the end of the game, it was because they had four wingers on and were going balls to the wall, trying to get a goal back. So a wonderful performance. It got a lot of traction in Brazilian media. Ronaldinho is like, I'm not watching the team anymore. Fuck this. Everything's over. All the panic we were having after Colombia, Brazil was having after us. So the USMNT did.
Well, that's because they don't respect us. That's why.
I mean, Ronaldinho is experiencing something that a lot of people have experienced under Greg Berhalter, which is just, I don't know if I like the sport anymore. It kind of sucks.
Well, it was funny because he's like, we lack creativity, we lack guts. I'm not watching this team anymore. And then Rafinha leaked some text between Ronaldinho and Junior asking for tickets. So
I mean, that's the most like real thing that I've seen Ronaldinho do ever. Because most of the time he's just like rich famous person that's like doing a bunch of like going to jail and playing soccer in jail. But this is him just like being over dramatic online because his team had a bad result. And that's the realest thing that Ronaldinho has ever done. We've all been there.
That's relatable. I relate to him in that moment. Relatable king.
Relatable for sure. But yeah, no, I think everyone on this team, at least in the starting 11 here, had a good performance, except maybe Pepe was a bit invisible. Tim Ream had some moments.
He's back.
Tim Ream was fully back in this game. Like the Colombia game, he looked 38. And then this one, he looked 26. This is Tim Ream fully back. Stay in the Premier League, my friend. You can still do it at Fulham. You don't need to go to Charlotte quite yet. The Colombia game looks like he needs to come to MLS. The Brazil game looks like he could sign for Man City. Like he could do what Pep wanted. It said, if you're 10 years younger, I would sign you.
He gets some cortisol shots.
Yeah. get his knees lubricated before the game. I also want to give a shout out to Shaq Moore. He played 10 minutes and he got
Vinicius. I was audacity. Like, why is he coming on? So.
He has to show that he can defend.
I can't believe that Shaq Moore even got into the game, and the fact that he even played is fucking wild to me. That in itself is nuts. He wasn't great in that 10 minutes, which is to be expected. He's an average MLS fullback going up against Vinicius Jr.
He's the glue guy.
If he's the glue guy, great.
Glue to the bench.
Don't play. Fine. but I honestly, genuinely, the audacity to be like, yeah, I'm going to go ask for Vinny's jersey. Crazy to me. Like, dude, you're Shaq Moore. What are we doing?
He thought he was related to Shaq.
That. They both played.
I think that's what happened. As in Shaquille O'Neal, obviously.
Yeah.
Duh.
I think it's, you know, they both, you know, had their, they play in Spain.
Do you think he knew who he was together?
I don't. Dude, like Shaq Moore played like maybe four appearances in La Liga. Like he mostly played in the second division in Spain. Like the likelihood that they even crossed paths is slim to none.
I gotta look this up in FPRF later. We'll see if they had like 10 minutes.
If that's the case, I will hold my hands up and be like, all right, Shaq Moore, you've played against him. Fair enough. But like,
no, this is not, they don't know each other. They're not.
No,
they're not
no way. But you're very hesitant about Joe Scally in general. So I want to ask your opinion about Joe Scally after what was a very, very impressive performance. Other than like one moment I can think of where he got nutmegged, but like we had a defender behind him to like stop it. he locked that shit down. What did you think, Mateus?
Yeah, like, I don't... Joe Scally's questions have never been really about his athleticism or even really his defense, although for the USMNT he had been burned a few times. But it was really his ball progression during the season with Mönch and Gladbach. There were whole games where they would not pass Joe Scally the ball on his side of the field. Just would not, because he didn't know what to do. He would just stall it and he wouldn't progress the ball any further up the field. Wouldn't dribble with it, would just stay there and pass it back to the center back. In this game, he showed that he can take the ball forward and run it really aggressively and do not Serginho Dest things, but combine and be an attacking presence on the field from the right back spot. And I think that allowed him to gain confidence and do all that stuff that he used to do as a teenager, really, is why he got into the Bundesliga anyways from kind of like 30 minutes NYCFC and shipped over there. I just think it was a big confidence boost for him just to put on that shirt and be the guy and, you know, just do what he can do, right? I think that was the crux of it. And after that, that kind of supplements his defending and his whole game. But, you know, him getting nutmegged, like, that's going to happen once a game with Vinicius Jr. That's going to happen once a game with Rodrigo. maybe even five times a game. Like, I wouldn't even, like, he could get nutmegged all day. I wouldn't really blame him. But strong off the ball, using his body really well. Yeah, I have gone from extremely fearful of having just a dud at right back to pretty comfortable. Yep. Like, he looks like a Bundesliga player, which I don't think I would have said, at least in a U.S. jersey.
Yeah, I think it's really encouraging going into Copa that, like, I feel confident about that position, because obviously going into these friendlies, there was a lot of question marks of, like, what we were going to do without Dest. And now that I feel like there's a clear number one option and what we're going to do, and it's not, there's no like experimenting that we're going to be like doing unless bar like injury, like we're not seeing Tyler Adams there. We're not seeing Tim Weah there. And that's okay with me. Joe Scally has played well enough where I'm very comfortable with him playing right back for the national team.
I also want to shout out real quick, Musa, who I've been upset with at various times. I'm not going to say he's still like going to be this great connector passing the ball, but he does not care who he's playing against. He will dribble out of pressure. And he did that at least three or four times where he just took it on the half turn, ran it up the gut, and looked really confident doing so. So I get to give him props for that. Like, his performance is a lot better than it was a couple months ago. And yeah, like, again, probably not someone I want starting at the six, but I'm pretty comfortable with him, or a lot more comfortable with him playing that position against like really good teams, especially that they're going to press, because that's where he shines, is turning out of pressure.
Yeah, so, the fact that he was able to like hold it down in a game like this, that was something I was keeping my eye on, because he's someone that I love. Yunus Musa. I think he's immensely talented. I don't know if I totally see him as a six yet. I think there's been like a lot of positives to take from his appearances as a six for the national team, but I do think that he is probably better off as an eight. But I am by no means concerned if he has to play there, but I think we have some really quality options where we don't need to play him there, which is good. Another player that I thought had a really great bounce back game, like Tim Ream, from the Columbia game, was Matt Turner. And I think that the two of them, I think I can point to these friendlies being really vital for, just in terms of shaking rust off. Ream didn't play for a lot of the back half of the season, mostly because of injury. And then once he came back from injury, Fulham had a pretty consistent center back pairing. And then Matt Turner obviously like lost his starting spot at Nottingham Forest. So they're both players without significant game time. And I think it really showed against Colombia, and then in the Brazil game, I think the rust was fully off, and now they look ready to go, which is exactly the spot we need them to be, because we can't like the biggest positive I can say from the Brazil friendly is that a lot of these positions have been fully locked down, and we don't have like question marks going into the Bolivia game this weekend about like certain key positions. Like I can confidently say what the back line and goalkeeper will be for the national team on Saturday. I can confidently say what the starting attack will be. The midfield is the only question, but I feel like that's more of that's probably just the deepest part of the team, where there's just like a lot of really quality options. But Matt Turner was phenomenal against Brazil. It was great to have him playing like that again. It was the most saves a U.S. goalkeeper has made in a game since the famous Tim Howard Belgium game, which obviously isn't a great stat if you like put it like it's a good stat for Matt Turner. It's not a great stat for our defense, like conceding that amount of shots. But the context is we're playing against Brazil. They are a better team than us. And we managed to get a result like this with a barrage attacking us.
The best stat is that we tied Brazil 1-1 and
exactly.
Got the penalties if it was a real game.
Yeah.
That's the best. Yeah. I mean, that's how you got to look at it. Like, we would have played Brazil to
which
a penalty kick.
If it, like, we were talking about context last week of with Copa America. And if context, U.S. goes out in the quarterfinals of Copa America against Brazil in penalties, I'm pretty comfortable with that. Like, it's going to hurt, but like, that's like a decent result and like decent context in going out. One last thing before we move on to NWSL, I do want to shout out Christian Pulisic's goal, because that like near post on a free kick was fucking awesome. And it was very nice.
I knew he was scoring that. I knew he was scoring that. Like, it wasn't even a question, because it was just like rolling on the ground. The ball was in a weird place, and we have a set piece, a set piece coach for that reason. That's why we had, you know, was it Weah and Musa flaring out left away from the ball.
Yeah. That's like sick. That's a lot of positives to take into the game this weekend. I'm very excited to watch the team live for the first time at AT&T.
Wow.
And hopefully we win Copa America. That's what I'm hoping for. let's get into NWSL. Before we get into the game, we want to talk real quick about some ref stuff, because that's always fun, because we're not talking about the Portland Thorns this week. But Sophia Smith's trying to hide the ball that we talked about last weekend got a little bit interesting with
a
the appeal
bit
process.
Interesting.
What happened with this, Emily?
Yeah, let me read for you what the independent review panel said. They've unanimously denied the appeal and determined the appeal was frivolous. And because of this, the following disciplinary actions apply. One, Portland will forfeit its bond. I don't know what the fuck that means. Two, Portland loses the right to appeal any other decisions for the remainder of the current season and the following season.
Jesus Christ.
Not just this year, but next year. That includes the playoffs for both seasons. And then this second part, the suspension and fine related to this appeal was doubled. Therefore, Smith is issued a 2-game suspension and increased fine. The Players Association fought this and was like, no, fuck this. So Sophia Smith is not suspended for this game this weekend. But, like, I don't understand the absolute, like, I don't know, punitive nature of this.
Okay. To be fair, for 1 second, crazy thing to appeal.
Yeah, I wouldn't have appealed this.
Like, insane decision by Portland to appeal it, but even insaner decision to punish them with all this.
And a question that was thrown out on Twitter is like, and also, why would you be punishing the player for the club appealing on their behalf? Like, especially with a fine on, this wasn't Sophia Smith, talk about like a normal like player's salary, like, you know.
I don't know how it is in the NWSL, but I'm pretty sure like Premier League clubs just like blanket appeal.
I mean, it makes sense to this one. I don't really see how you're gonna get this one off, but it does make sense to just appeal. But like, when appeals are turned over, like, I've never seen something like this happen.
No, I haven't either. It's an insane reaction to an appeal, because they quite frankly happen all the time, like Mateus said. Like,
right,
teams will appeal anything because they're just trying to get anything back. If like your best, like, I understand it from Portland's perspective in the regard of your best player got suspended, why not try to appeal it?
Yeah.
Like, if they hypothetically, worst they say is no, but in reality, they're banned from appealing things.
Like,
for
actually, the worst.
No, the worst they say is fuck you. Actually,
it was like
that's what it is.
The Uno like times four like card came out. Like,
yeah, I guess maybe this is just like making Portland an example of for other NWSL clubs of like whatever like shadowy figures are behind this appeal process 100%. Are like
independent.
Stop giving us fucking paperwork to do. Like, we don't want to look at your appeals. Like, don't fuck with us unless it's an actual fucking appeal kind of thing, which is still insane.
Yeah,
but like. Whatever.
This is the cop behavior that mm-hmm. was exhibited more this weekend.
Yep.
And the first instance, I don't know if you watch the Gotham game, within 5 minutes, Daniel Chesky, who, if you guys aren't familiar, is kind of an infamous referee in the NWSL, like where she leads chaos follows. Like, within 5 minutes, Katie Stengel's called for a foul, and she and Daniel Chesky are standing not like a foot apart. Chesky blows her whistle, like basically in Stengel's ear, and she just like reacts to it. Like, I mean, it's not even a dramatic reaction. And immediately Chesky pulls out a yellow card. So yeah. She's like been assaulted in her eardrum and then carded for it.
Yeah, we famously love referees on this show. But you've given me a great segue. Let's talk about Gotham 2 Racing Mill. Yeah.
Ugh, what a beautiful game. The beautiful game. Am I right? Probably the most dominant performance from Gotham this season. Louisville's kind of been like a weird, I guess, bogey team for us. Like, we've only won against them once and have like drawn them like five times. But not this case. 62% possession, you know, created a good number of chances. Never felt like we were in danger from like Racing. They didn't really have anything coming for us. And we scored some fun goals. It was nice to see Yasmin get on the score sheet. Like, and I said last week, it'd be nice if she could add some goals to her game. But we got to talk about Elle Stevens, because that was like the goal. One of the goals of the weekend. It wasn't voted goal of the weekend, but in my heart it was. really great ball from Mandy Freeman that Ella takes like out of the air, volleys into the corner. Celebration was even better. Hit him with like the calm down. She had been getting kind of into it with the Racing players and the supporters beforehand. So that was kind of like a nice like fuck you celebration.
How quickly has Ella Stevens become like one of, if not your favorite Gotham player?
It's like a straight shot to the top. This is her fifth goal this season, which I think ties like her most output in her past. I don't know if this is her like fourth or fifth year in the league, but most production in her career. And she's like surprising me all the time with like her levels of like sauce and sass. I was like not expecting the, you know, the banter with the supporters, and I was like, oh my god, scandalized a little bit.
It's very a fun
flush. Yeah.
It's a great win from Gotham. Let's move on now to Spirit 1 Wave 1. What'd you think, Emily?
This is a good game. Spirit were like really hot coming out from the start. Kept turning the ball over in their press and getting in great positions. Rodman and Bethune came really close to scoring early on. And then basically right in like against her on a play, the Wave scored off like a really awkward finish from Jaden Shaw. Really nice cross from Maria Sanchez, and then Shaw took it out of the air, but she like tripped over it, but still managed to get it in the goal. It was kind of like Astina Blackstenius. Remember when she like whiffed the ball and then she scored? She didn't quite whiff it, but kind of similar vibes. And then I kind of spent the rest of the game just thinking like, okay, well, the Spirit are probably going to score, but I don't know what's going to happen after that. But I was just expecting them to score. And then time kept going. Gurma had like a monster game. Dahlkemper also had like a really nice game. So it was kind of like Spirit were playing well, but maybe those two were just too good that night. And then we get to basically last minute of stoppage time. I had kind of figured, all right, like this is kind of over. Great win for the Wave. And then Casey Krueger plays the ball over the top. Takes like a very fortunate deflection off of Dahl Kemper's head. Corey Bethune takes it with her chested down into her path, lets it bounce, fires it near post. And like Audi Field, which is sold out, was like going batshit crazy. Her celebration too was just like so cool. She's what, like 19 years old? She's so cool.
She's cool as shit. We're about the halfway point about both the MLS and NWSL season. Is there a serious question? Like, hypothetically,
I was going to ask this question to you.
If Croy Bethune does not play the rest of the season, is she just still a lock for Rookie of the Year?
Oh, yeah. Well, this wasn't actually going to – she's a lock on Rookie of the Year. I was asking, like, what's her chances for MVP? Honestly.
I'm looking at the goals plus assists here. Sophia Smith has 15. It's Bethune and Chiwenga on 13. And Banda's in fourth at 11.
And she's...
Sophia Smith going to get time off for the Olympics.
So we're not playing we're not playing real end-of-cell games during the Olympics. We're playing like that Mexico-friendly stuff. What's great this time around is that... players aren't going to be affected by that. Teams aren't going to be affected by that. So this is going to be really interesting. I don't think she's going to, like, unless I think if Spirit like finish win the Shield. Great argument.
The unfortunate thing about MVP awards is it is typically based on how well your team does.
Yeah.
I guess to be fair, the winner last season played for North Carolina, for Caroline, and they weren't that great. So hypothetically, you could be on a team and still win MVP. But like, if the Spirit do like win the Shield or something, I could see Bethune potentially winning MVP. It's crazy to think about because you're just like, yeah, she's like a kid. Like she should just be in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. Like we shouldn't be talking about her as MVP, but like it's disrespectful to her to not put her in this conversation at this point, which is crazy.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility. It depends on the rest of the season with Bia and Chiwenga, but they could split votes. And if they split votes and Portland isn't at the top of the table.
Spirit.
I mean that
I think she has like depending on where people play out, but I think she'll be on the short list.
Yeah, which in itself would be an accomplishment.
Oh, for sure.
And tremendous achievement and, like, full, like, hey, this is truly the star of the league, like, on the rise, which is very cool to watch. It was a great goal from her to draw this game. Let's move on now to current 2, Red Stars 2. What do you think, Emily?
Well, it's a very surprising result, probably for both teams. And surprising, Chicago is the one who like started off firing Mal Swanson. This was another goal that I just can't wrap my head around. If you see it, the angle was kind of like nearly impossible. It slid in between, like millimeters away from AD French, like touching it and getting probably deflecting it wide of goal. Flew perfectly like under her armpit.
Yeah.
Into the goal. And then when you watch it, like it is kind of like really mind bending when you see it live. But really great goal. And then basically immediately Red Stars are like under fire, just getting like peppered and just kind of trying not to concede. And they did a good job for the first half. And I was wondering, wow, maybe could the Red Stars be the ones to take down the Current? And pretty quickly into the second half, the answer is no, they're not the ones. They're not the ones that are going to do that. It was kind of an unfortunate goal from Alyssa Nair's perspective. She went out on a corner kick to like punch it away, didn't get anything on it. And they were able to score on that, Bia was. So not good for her when, you know, Emma Hayes is looking on. Second goal, Chiwenga gets it, and she had like, she was probably owed one all game. She had like 8 shots herself, 4 on target. So she definitely had done pretty much everything else but score. That seemed like that was going to be it until like the 89th minute. Red Stars win a corner and Sam Staub wins the header to score. And it's a big point for the Red Stars, you know, trying to stay in those like bottom playoff positions. And especially last week, I think they were very disappointed not to get a result at Wrigley.
I'm kind of shocked they're as high on the table as they are. They have negative goal differential. I guess North Carolina does as well. But playoff spot still over
the Wave. The Wave, well, we just talked about them, but obviously it's a third year slump. I think we're seeing like a lot of separation now from the top five teams to the rest. Like there's a pretty good point margin. So I think you're seeing like elite to not elite.
Well, speaking of two not elite teams, the two expansion teams played this week, and Bay lost to Utah. Dude, won a game. That is unbelievable.
Kind of. I don't know what to say to this game other than it pissed me off how how poor Bay played. Like, this is such a chance for them to be like, we are the superior expansion team. Like, we went out and we got star players, you know, we really invested in this squad. And they just did not finish their chances. Like, they did create a good number of opportunities in the first half. Kunanagi and Oshawala both had, like, basically sitters that they missed. And then there was like a lot of great goalkeeping from Andy Hott, and blocks in front of goal. So I guess like unfortunate, just like misfortunate, I don't know, but still pissed me off. Like after that, there wasn't really anything in the tank for them. They took Oshawala off in like the 65th minute, which didn't make any sense to me. I was just like, what are you doing? Danny Castellanos, come on. She's not really done anything. She's kind of been a disappointing player that they've, you know, signed kind of as a big player from City. So it's very disappointing not to build on like the momentum from winning at Wrigley last week, because I do think they played really well there. So playing this game at home against Utah, who's not been good at all, like very disappointing, especially, you know, this is another like last minute winner. Keita Fava has no business winning a header when she's standing next to Kayla Sharples in the box. I know a certain center back on the bench, Jen Beattie, who would have maybe won that header.
My forever favorite Jen Beattie moment will be the goal against Wolfsburg and then her just fucking trucking a Wolfsburg player.
She pop.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I love Jen Beattie.
So yeah, kind of a shit performance from Bay when they're at home. Could have, you know, grabbed 3 points that were very needed, but
yep.
Good win for Utah.
Disappointing for them. Good for Utah to get, like, is it their
second win?
Yeah. Well, another one on the board for them, so that's great. That's all for NWSL this week. Let's move on to MLS. And we're going to start out with a wild game that happened before the weekend. Crew 3, NYCFC 2. What did you think, Mateus?
Friday night in the Bronx at the baseball stadium. But this is a must watch because these are two teams that actually, or the Columbus Crew come out and play, right? They're going to come out and play. They're not going to sit back and defend. So it wasn't going to be a boring game at, you know, on the 70% pitch, the 7-on-7 pitch in the Bronx.
They should actually play all the games 7-on-7.
Yeah, I mean, they really should. But, like, it was fun for that reason. Like, it basically was just like a futsal match. NYCFC go down a man in the 28th minute, I think, or 38th minute, something like that, on a dog. So Chris Ramirez gets pulled down by Ilyanich. And then right after halftime, they get two quick goals with Ramirez and Farsi tapping in. I totally just missed the NYCFC goal before halftime. My bad, y'all. Ojeda scored a nice goal before halftime when they were already down 10 men. So down a man, but up a goal into halftime. And you're thinking, oh, Crew are going to come out and chase this one. They do. They tap in two goals really quickly. Mo Farsi on the scene for both of them. Arthur Ramirez scored the first one. Mo Farsi, who was going to have a good game on this, he's a futsal player, futsal background, is going to be good in tight spaces, and he was all game. But NYCFC, despite being down a man, despite my thoughts that Nick Cushing is a terrible coach with terrible vibes, played really hard. Like, really, really ran their fucking asses off up and down the pitch. Despite that, they give up a PK. Hannes Wolf shoves Mo Farsi again in the back. Cucho scores a banger, make it 3-1. But still running up and down the pitch. They bring in Christian McFarlane on, a young kid who almost has an assist immediately. He's an England international, actually. And they finally get one when Santi Rodriguez gets a go route, just like running straight up the field. Holds himself onside, goes around Patrick Schulte, really nice finish. And then they're still pushing towards the end despite being down to 10 men. It went to like 104 minutes because of the weather delay after halftime. But they couldn't get it done. Crew, like, survive, I would say. They had more XG. They had a lot of shots. Matt Fries had a really good performance in goal despite giving up 3 goals. But it was really spirited from NYCFC. And I think you'd even saw the players after the game. Like, a lot of them were like, all right, we were down a man. Like, but, like, that's the defending champs. Let's clap ourselves up a little bit. Like, that wasn't so bad. Yeah, I'm not a fan of those. But I think after how they've been good for the past a couple months or so, but the really start of the season, NYCFC played really badly. And I think to take 10 men to the crew like that and really have a few chances to go up felt pretty good for them.
Nice moral win from the baseball merchants. Let's move on now to Rapids 2, Austin 0. Finally back to winning ways, and it was on my birthday, so that was great. They didn't ruin my birthday by losing. I made my family watch the Rapids. It was great. It was a great time. Cole Bassett scored a fucking screamer to start scoring in this game. It was a great fucking goal. And then Rafa Navajo scored the second goal of this game. And we're now at the point, like, Rafa Navajo has 10 goals for the Rapids this season, which is not an insignificant amount of goals. And this is exactly what we need out of a number 9. I don't care how many of those were penalties. That's exactly what we need out of a number 9. Actually, at this point, I think, like, only, like, 4... maybe 5 of them are penalties. I think
only half.
Like, okay. I'm fully at the point where it's just pay the money, pay whatever Palermas wants. Whatever, like, we've agreed for the option. I know Boger reported that we're at least we're attempting to kind of negotiate, but we're gonna make it permanent, which is the obvious choice. I mean, this is a striker that's now scored 10 goals for the team. You can't afford to, like, oh, he's got to go back to Brazil for a month while we negotiate a lower price. Like, you can't afford to do that. We can't, like, be starting Darren Yappy in games because Navajo is back at Brazil.
A little bit inside baseball here. The GM for Palmeiras is a very shrewd lady who is not going to let you go for anything other than that.
And Porak Smith is also very shrewd, so it's going to be a fight to the death. So we'll see what happens with that, but I fully expected it to be made permanent, and I'm very excited for that. I think he's been phenomenal for us. This is his best golden assist season of his career outside of Serie B, so that's a really good sign. Like, his first time in a top division scoring 10 goals, he's been the guy, and that's exactly what the Rapids need from a DP. It's what we're paying him for, and it was a great win from the Rapids. Like, this is a team that was in Austin that was ahead of us in the table. They're wearing their super stylish kits, and we got it done. We got a nice 2-0 win at home. 17,000 people are showing up. People are there for the Rapids. Wow. It's awesome.
A tear to the eye.
Can I get a Kevin Cup? Kevin, I get a
Kevin Cabral. Forgot right? He was playing.
What about little back heel though? That little back heel he did.
I guess he was kind of involved with the Navajo goal. A little back heel. I forgot about that.
Yeah. You also honestly forgot to mention that Cole Bassett hit the Cole Palmer.
Well, his name is also,
I know,
Cole, and I think he may have been doing it for longer. I don't fact check me on that, but
you're starting rumors.
I am starting rumors. I don't think that's true. I think that Cole is doing a different celebration now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, but, the actually good Cole is Cole Bassett. People should know.
That is correct. Yeah. 100%. Cole Bassett is better than Cole Palmer. Mm-hmm. On Kevin Cabral, I think a forgettable performance is honestly better than the slop he has been giving me, which is infuriating performance. So, performance where you're so bad I have to yell at you is where he's been at. And performance where I forgot he's playing is actually an upgrade, which is really sad to say about someone who makes $1 million a year. I can't wait for the Rapids to upgrade on him. But great win from the Rapids. Let's move on now to Cincinnati 4, San Jose 2. What'd you think, Emily?
Yeah, funny game. All of the action actually happened in the second half. And you'd say that San Jose probably played better for long stretches of the second half, had themselves in a position where they're 2-1 up in like the 77th minute. And at that point, you're probably like, okay, like, how are we going to manage, you know, the rest of the game against like one of the best teams in the league? And you probably don't think that you're going to manage that by like still sending like 9 players into the opposition half when there's only 12 minutes to play, which is what happened when they were caught out on the break by a single pass from Acosta, which Kubo went one-on-one with one defender, scores. That basically, that's the equalizer. A couple minutes later, dam breaks, and it's 3-2. Another Kubo goal, another assist from Acosta. It ends 4-2 with a Kubo hat trick in 10 minutes. He was a second half substitute.
Quickest hat trick in 20 years.
And a hat trick of assists from Acosta. So, friends, you know, when you're up, when you're ahead, try to stay ahead.
Don't be the San Jose Earthquakes is the moral of the story today.
I paused my, like, computer, and I was like, how is there one guy back there in the other half when they were, when they scored that goal? I was like, how is this how they are?
Mateus, what do you think about their usage of Kubo? Because I feel like he's been an interesting player, like, where I've seen him as a midfielder a lot, and then he came on as a striker. Am I correct mm-hmm. in saying that? And scored a hat trick. Like, yeah. Is he their Brandon Vasquez replacement?
He's not the Brandon Vasquez replacement, right? That's mm-hmm. Kelsey, who they brought in from the Ukraine. But Kubo's a guy they just trust to be anywhere, right? He can play deep lying forward. He can play, I think his natural position, you'd say, would be like a deep lying midfielder. But like, he's played wing back a lot for them as well. He's just a guy they trust. He's physical. He's strong. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's going to make his presence mm-hmm. known. He's just like a savvy vet. And I think every, you know, he's the glue guy, I guess. I'm not calling the Shaq more. That's fucked up. But like, he's a guy that can be leaned on to fill in gaps, and he knows what positions to fill, and we'll get out there and just like do a job, right? And if that means playing deep lying forward for FC Cincinnati,
from what I've seen from Cincinnati fans, is they just fucking love that guy. Like, he's a fan favorite, like a guy that everyone loves. He's playing everywhere. He's coming in as a striker in the second half, scoring a hat trick. Like, how can you not love a player like that? I don't blame him.
I like his hair.
And he's been there, yeah, he's been there since their first season, I believe.
That'll also bring you a lot of love from the faithful, is of being there for the entire time of their existence in MLS. Let's move on now to Dallas 2, St. Louis 0. What do you think, Mateus? A big win from Dallas.
A big win from Dallas, and that's why I went back and watched this game, because like 2-0, right? They just fired Nico Esteves. This is their first game with their new coach, who I'm not gonna lie, I'm forgetting his name right now.
Sorry to that man.
Apologies to the new coach. Sorry to that man. Peter Luchin, I think.
Yeah, Peter Luchin. We all know him. Yeah.
Yeah.
A household name, surely. But going's like 2-0. Oh, let's see what they did here. It wasn't that great. It wasn't that great. They the starting 11 stayed unchanged, other than the inclusion of Nicosi Tefare, who was one of the best center backs in MLS last year. And Nico Esteves was just wrong for taking him out the team. Like, it made no fucking sense, to be honest with you. But Tefare back in, I think, was important. The team all looked a lot more motivated. Farah goes up, takes a PK at the 28th minute. It was a very weak PK. It was a shoulder-to-shoulder with Nielsen and Paul Areola. Paul Areola's in on goal. It was definitely shoulder-to-shoulder, and the PK was given and not reversed on VAR. I didn't like that decision, but Ferris smashes it home, and then they decide to just bunker. And they bunkered the whole rest of the game. But at the same point, like, St. Louis City is not a team who's, like, been super creative in tight spaces. I think they've had one or two games where I've shouted them out for being better about that. But they're relying a lot on Edward Lowen, who was out for a long time and who's also playing from a deeper position. And also, Celio Pompeo got hurt pretty early in this game. I think he's out for this season as well, so they're going to have to find a new replacement there to have a creative spark in tight spaces. But they were just pumping crosses in from deep, from the half space, from wherever. Basically, it was Lowen crossing it in, aiming for Jean Klaus, and hoping for a header into the net. And it wasn't really happening for them. I will say Paz kind of stood on his head a little bit throughout the game. Indonesian international, by the way. There was not a whole lot going on. FC Dallas had a goal from open play that was called back. Logan Farrington, who I believe is an academy player, received from Peter Musa on like a really tight turn and put it in. It was called back for offsides. But other than that, it was all shots from outside the box until Tefare puts a second one in when he's just like totally unmarked. In the end, Vasilev lets him roam free on a corner. He comes around and puts an open header in the back of the net around the 88th minute. But they, at this point of the game, like, St. Louis City was just like tired from like pumping balls in and like not really getting anything super solid on that. Paz was standing on his head, getting everything out. And I think the frustration just kind of built up and just tired legs. And then the second goal goes in, they just kind of shut down. So credit to Dallas to grinding out a win. It was really grinding it out. Nothing sexy about it. No intricate play. I think they had like one shot, right? The Ferrer PK, I think, was their only shot inside the box that I remember, other than the corner. So I'm not expecting anything sexy from Dallas anytime soon, but a win is a win is a win. Ferreira's goal scoring form again, I guess, you know, that's one for the books. And they can hopefully start to grind stuff.
You mentioned Paz, the goalkeeper, and I was talking to Ryan Fergert, who he works social media for FC Dallas. He said that he's been the most like interesting thing about the team this year because it's been a tough year. Because of like his switch to becoming an Indonesia international, it's been very cool. Like, FC Dallas has kind of welcomed in like a whole nother group of fans, international fans, which is very cool. And like, it's always fun to see like small storylines like that through a team that's like having a tough year. So hopefully it's a good sign of good things for Dallas, but obviously you're not convinced by the performance. Let's move on now to Orlando 1, LAFC 3. And I'm just so confused by Orlando. I just don't understand if they're good or not. Facundo Torres missed a penalty. It's been a tough season for him. And then like Luis Muriel had a great assist for their one goal. But LAFC is just so, so lethal on the counter, which makes me understand their personnel decisions so little, because I don't understand why you're counting your attacking team signing Olivier Giroud, who, by the way, their starting striker in this game was Kai Kamara. So they are about to have the oldest fucking striker room of all time. Like, Kai Kamara is like 38, 39. Giroud's like 35.
That's a like, great point.
They are about to have such an old group of strikers for a team that wants to play on the counter. And I truly don't understand that. But you have Denny Bouanga, who can go crazy on the counter, and Bogush, who can go crazy on the counter. So I don't know. Maybe it'll work having slow guys who can finish as your number nines.
That trailing run, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, that late run into the box is going to be key for Steve Cherundolo's team. They have kind of flown up the table. Like, I think they're in second now behind RSL, which, like, kind of took me by surprise because I feel like it's been kind of a tepid year for LAFC. Like, they've been good but not great. Like, the spotlight's been more on LA Galaxy, who have been very, very exciting.
It was tepid until
that's the biggest thing, is their best player started playing their best player again, and now they're looking like a good team. It'll be interesting to see how Giroud fits into that roster and stuff like that, because I do feel like they just are so good on the counter, and I think that, like, another fast striker would have been beneficial for them. But it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But a good win from them. Tough one for Orlando. Let's move on to our last game that we're covering this week, which is Philly 1, Miami 2. A 9-man Inter Miami. Sorry, did I say Philly 2? Philly 1, Miami 2.
Yeah. No, Philly takes the L on this one pretty badly. Starting off this game, both rosters severely, severely, severely depleted. Philly missing Andre Blake. They're missing Jack Elliott due to suspension, and all their other center backs, apparently. So Nathan Herrio, a natural fullback, playing left center back all of a sudden. Missing Gazdag for the Euros. Missing Carranza, who is now gone to Feyenoord, I think, for a $4-5, maybe $6 million fee. So they're missing a hell of a lot of players. Severely rotated squad. Inter Miami is obviously missing
who?
Lionel Messi. And never heard of him.
I saw they're missing like a Suarez. Is he good?
Suarez.
I want to say
he's with the Uruguay squad.
No, excuse me.
Oh my god.
That's like Cavani. Cavani retired. My bad. Cavani retired. So yeah, Suarez out, Messi out. They're starting Campana up front, Gressel again. But anyways, a lot of rotation, a lot of missing pieces for both teams. And that played into the trail end of the game. Anyway, first goal comes really early. Mikalura, I guess they didn't read the scouting report, because I know Inter Miami wants to play with a high line. They will do that. They stuck their guns in that regard. But Mikalura is Philly's only real striker left, and the only thing he can do is run in behind and maybe finish sometimes on occasion. Which is exactly what they let him do in the second minute of this game. It's just walk in behind Sergi Christophe and put in a nice finish around Callander. And it almost happens again with Quinn Sullivan like 10 minutes later. So a really shaky start for Inter Miami. But yeah, like it turned out to be like a quiet first half after the initial goal and like sort of adjustments from Miami to like then not get beat in behind that badly. But early in the second half, Gressel smashes one in from around the penalty spot, just drifts across the goal after, or I think it was cut back from like the Man City zone into Gressel, who like has like a half volley. Except I noticed that there was not a single Philly defender on his side of the field. I don't know if it's just like the heavy legs, halftime switching off, but there's like four Philly attackers or like four Philly players like by the halfway line, while like in Miami are like a slow buildup of possession around their 18-yard box. So I don't know if they just switched off. I don't know if it was the heavy legs cutting, like starting to take effect already, but that wasn't really a pretty sight if I was Jim Curtin. And it didn't really get much better. They were saved a little bit by David Reyes getting the first red card of the match, 68th minute, for stopping a counter. Just kind of stuck his leg out after he took a bad touch and took down Leon Flack. But yeah, this Philly team started to look a little bit gassed. Like, they're obviously a man up, so they're starting to apply a little bit more pressure, like hold the ball a little bit more, stay in the Inter Miami side of the field, but not like looking pretty gassed. And there's not a lot of options off the bench. Human victory cigar Tal Baribo came onto the field, who's played like 10 minutes all season. And so that's when you know like the bench is getting kind of skimpy, and he actually had a really good chance that he almost put away past Callander. But I think it was the 88th minute, Inter Miami get their second yellow card or second red card. Thomas Avilés pokes the ball away. Sophia Smith,
when will they learn?
For time wasting, they won't. It was on a throw in too. It was like totally gonna like 5 seconds. Like, congratulations. But the ref's like staring straight at him, pulls up the second yellow. Inter Miami down to 9 men. but just hustling way harder on broken balls, on broken pass to play than Philly. And 94th minute, they get a 3-on-1 break against Glesnes. Basically, it was Leo Alfonso. I think Kermaski was following up on the other side and one other player. But Leo Alfonso just, I think he's a midfielder, just takes it around Glesnes, puts it past Shemla near post. Just like out hustling, like no one from Philadelphia was getting back whatsoever to go and retreat on the counter. And it was really a simple finish. Like Glesnes is not a super mobile center back or one that's, you know, he's capable of being turned, and puts it away. Takes off the jersey, does the messy celebration in Subaru Park, and Miami hold off in stoppage time to take the 3 points away despite being down two men at the end. After the game, Philly looking pretty fucking frustrated, I think, not just because of the result, but because of the Carranza sale, because of the continued underinvestment in this club, and, you know, them losing this game in large part because the bench is really thin. So Kai Wagner was complaining in the post game. Jim Curtin was like, Kai knows it's not going to help, but also please don't sell our best players all the time.
Yeah. Or like at least reinvest the best players' fees back into the club, that kind of thing. I guess that's
hard
to do.
There's still time this summer.
Yeah. But I honestly, reason for Philly to be like upset about it, because that's a pretty embarrassing result to lose to a nine-man team, and a nine-man team that Inter Miami, without all the like Barca boys, are a pretty bad team. I guess they had Busquets and Alba, but like they're a pretty bad team with like an average team without like Messi and Suarez and all of them. But tough result for Philly. But that's all for us this week. Talk to you guys next week about American soccer and stuff. I'm botching the ending of this show. Goodbye.
Peace.
The shirtless flag said, sure.